Taking a look now at the challenges facing biofuels companies here in Wisconsin. There are a lot of them, and we'll be talking about that with Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. Tom's president of that council. It's an independent, nonprofit organization. It serves as the science and technology advisor for the governor and the legislature. He's also president of the Wisconsin Innovation Network, and that it's responsible for supporting efforts to foster technology development in the state. He was once an associate editor of the Wisconsin State Journal and as such founded and served as president of the We the People Wisconsin. It's a civic journalism project involving, among other organizations, Wisconsin Public Radio. And go to the full disclosure, he also teaches a class in my Department of Life Sciences Communication from across the campus. So he's got his fingers in a lot of pies, and we're really glad to have him here to zero in today on biofuels and the challenges those companies face. You may have some questions or comments as we move along today, and I hope you do, and I hope you'll join us. The number to call with your question or comment, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tom, welcome.
Hey, good to see you, Larry.
Yeah, good to have you.
Thanks for the intro, although the most important thing I do probably is teach that class.
I know. You're doing a lot of pretty important things. Talk about that Technology Council for a minute,
sure,
will you?
Sure. Technology Council now is about really 8 years old.
Yeah.
It's an independent nonprofit. But we're actually established. It goes back to then Governor Tommy Thompson and the legislature at the time to be a science and tech advisor to the governor and the legislature, and so that's a good part of what we do. We really try to serve as a source of policy ideas. But then we do a lot of things that are connected to the entrepreneurial community in Wisconsin, especially around technology. We got a large board, and they really help out a lot.
And I suppose that dovetails in pretty well with the Wisconsin Innovation Network.
Exactly. The Wisconsin Innovation Network is really the membership arm of the Tech Council. And it was created really to give us outreach around the state. So we have six chapters, different places, everywhere from the Ashland area up by Lake Superior to Milwaukee, Madison, Fox Valley, Central Wisconsin, Western Wisconsin. So it's where people, you know, get together and talk about these kinds of ideas.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're looking at, what is it, about 9% of our liquid fuel supply now. I think our supply is, 138 billion gallons.
Mm-hmm.
About 9% of that comes from biofuels, mostly ethanol from corn.
Mm-hmm.
And by 2022, which isn't all that far off, Congress has declared biofuels production to reach 36 billion gallons, so that'd be about, what, 26-27% roughly,
mm-hmm,
of our supply?
Yeah.
So from 9% to 26 or so?
Yeah, of today's, you know, using today's total supply figures, which of course will go up between now,
right,
and then, even with conservation. So, yeah, that's a, you know, it's an ambitious goal.
Are we going to meet that goal, do you think?
It's going to be all about scalability and finding those technologies and zeroing in on those technologies that will allow us to get there, not by the gallon, but by the hundreds of millions of gallons.
Yeah.
And it's tough because with biofuels, you have the question of, you know, the source and how close it is to where you can then refine it. Of course, the costs involved in all that, how much energy can be derived from a particular source of biofuels. So it's fairly complicated. But, you know, the good news is there's a lot of companies out there working on it, a lot of researchers working on it. And, you know, I'm confident that there's going to be some good answers.
You talked about scalability in your TechViews column this month in the Capital Regional Business Journal, and it's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. And really, that challenge then is to for biofuel companies here in Wisconsin is whether, you know, that technology really is scalable.
Yeah, and scalable at a cost that that make it competitive with what else is on the market. You know, with biofuels, you know, we are largely talking about transportation fuels. As you know, that's the main reason we'd be doing this. And so that means competing with petroleum. And, you know, there, the distribution system's in place. That advantage has long been there. Technology has made it easier to find and safely extract petroleum products. You know, you can see stories about any day of the week where, you know, new finds announced here, there, or elsewhere. Yeah. Getting it out of sources that never would have some years ago. Yeah. So it means that petroleum has become, you know, that industry is trying to stay competitive.
Right.
And for a lot of reasons, it will for a while. So that means that's where biofuels has got to compete in the volume and the cost.
Tom Still, our guest, as we talk with him about the challenges facing biofuels companies here in Wisconsin. Tom's president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. Glad to have him with us. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org, and we'd love to hear from you. I guess the scalability business, the federal and state policymakers are really going to have to dig in to help with the scalability, I assume.
Yeah, and I think they're going to have to be very careful about at this. There's a combination of not picking winners, but then backing things
yeah.
that where you see promise. You know, obviously, ethanol is going to be around for a while because the scalability there is possible. Corn-based ethanol. Now, the technology on that has improved, but still, you know, there are a lot of questions about how much acreage and how much corn do you really want to devote to ethanol at the end of the day. But still, that's going to be there, and it's going to be filling that gap for a lot of years. And I think it's going to have to be a part of that 2022 picture. But when you look at other things that are out there, cellulosic ethanol is one possible choice. A variety of other biofuels that can be produced from everything from wood waste to woody plants to switchgrass to rutabagas. I mean, it's, you know, there's a range. And so how can we get something that works at the scale and the cost that we need? And there are a few things we can talk about companies that even in Wisconsin that may have a part of the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do want to talk about some of those companies. Virent?
Yeah, Virent.
Virent is, and we'll get to that. We'll tease on that a little bit because I want to go to Mary Jo in Wausau, who has a question for you. Mary Jo, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding the large livestock operations that we have in the state and the feasibility of using the manure to generate energy. I know that there are a couple of pilot projects, but in throughout the state, there are a lot of big livestock operations that are just essentially spreading the manure on the fields, and it seems to me this would be a resource that could be very helpful.
All right.
Yeah. The caller's right, and hope things are well in Wausau. It's manure digesters in Wisconsin are already a part of the picture, and I think this state is still number two behind California in the total number of digesters in operation, and perhaps also the total amount of manure that's going through. They are less likely a source of biofuels than they are energy that can be then put onto the electrical grid or in some cases actually kind of recycled back into the farming operation itself. UW Green Bay, some of the programs up there have tried to focus on this. I know in the caller's neck of the woods, UW Stevens Point has done a lot of work around this. There are some other projects underway, but I think that is more about generating small but not insignificant amounts of electrical power that can go can either go on a private grid or back into the larger grid.
Yeah, and there are some farms that are doing a pretty good job of this right now, of actually generating electricity back that to run several hundred homes.
That's correct, and that's you know, in Northeast Wisconsin, I think there's some very good examples about that, and there are other places where the entire farming operation is powered by this, and then they're still able to sell a little bit of it off to the grid.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary Jo, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Don in Watertown, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hello. A quick question.
Sure.
In the 70s, I had a diesel car that got like 56 miles to a gallon. Realizing that, you know, probably the biggest thing that we buy that expends energy is probably a car. And I'm thinking about the biodiesels now and the kind of mileage that they're getting, because it appears they're still up around 55 to 60. What do you think the future is on biodiesels, and is it worthwhile to go that route?
Okay.
Really good point about diesel. You know, for years, I think some of the complaints were everything from noise to smell to whatever. But today's diesel engines are getting better all the time, and they're able to run a variety. You know, you
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can pour in there. And biodiesel is really becoming a choice for a lot of people. I mean, that's part of that scalability question, because again, you can derive that from a lot of different ways. Soybeans is one example where a lot of that can come from. And there's a fair amount of research going on around enzymes that can help make that process even more efficient, so that you can get more, more fuel per bushel, and or whatever the weight is that will be used to measure some of the commodities. And so that's been emerging. And again, diesel engines are continuing to get more efficient.
I guess the follow-on to that would be then, because the trucking industry clearly is in diesels, and because of the power situation with them, so do you see them going to more biodiesels? And I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, I think the trucking industry in particular is going to look at about anything that can help them keep costs down. But they're also looking at new technologies to reduce idling by diesel trucks, which has always been, a part of that equation. In fact, there's a company in Wisconsin called Idle Free Systems that was actually founded by a trucker/scientist and who developed a way to dramatically cut down idling on his trucks over time. And now that's actually up and running as a company, and I could see how in logistics nationwide over time those kinds of answers are going to be a part of it.
Well, yeah, that's just sort of an aside in a way, but people often wonder why these semis are parked and they're just sitting there idling, and wondering why that's the case. I guess it has to do with starting and stopping.
Starting, restarting, the whole process, and some of that can be, and it's also about batteries.
Oh, batteries.
Keeping batteries charged.
Yeah.
And in some cases, keeping, the cabs warm, if indeed there's, somebody in there overnight, which is often the case with truckers. So, yeah, they're off on the side of the road and taking a well-deserved rest.
Tom Still, our guest, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. We're going to go hear from John in just a minute from Algoma. But you can join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk with Tom about the challenges facing biofuels companies in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of challenges facing biofuels companies in Wisconsin and across the nation, for that matter, as we visit with Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council and also president of the Wisconsin Innovation Network, responsible for supporting efforts to foster technology development in the state. So really pleased to have Tom with us today. And we'll take some more calls here. John in Algoma up next. John, hello.
Hello. Great topic. I'm sitting in the city of Kewaunee looking at Lake Michigan in my diesel truck and not idling, with a question about biodiesel and also an ethical question. The question about biodiesel is that it all sounds very interesting, and I've done some reading on it, but you know, the reality I see in our area, at least, is the best you can do is buy B5, which is actually like buying biodiesel for the feel-good, because 5% really doesn't count for a whole lot. But the only commercially available biodiesel is B5 at one location in Green Bay. And so the question is, you know, what is being done, as opposed to just talked about, to create the infrastructure for and the provision of biodiesel in this area. The biggest problem I've got is that my engine warranty is invalidated if I use practically anything other than the petroleum diesel that's available from a gas station. That's the diesel question. The other one is about ethanol. It's my understanding that it takes about the amount of corn that's used to produce 25 gallons of ethanol is enough corn to feed one human being for 1 year. And how are we going about balancing the ethical issue of food available for the human species versus our need to drive to town?
Mm-hmm. All right. Couple of questions there.
Great questions, and I hope to get one back to him about the whole idling question that we were talking about earlier. Okay, let's start with diesel distribution and mm-hmm. the different blends. I think a fair amount of research what I have seen has been focused on that, about trying to get, you know, that 5% mixture up to a higher level, and in terms of the actual distribution of that, I know less right now about some of the most recent things, but I do know that there are some incentives that are being talked about, and this gets back to what you said, Larry, about what government may or may not do.
Right.
Where, you know, rather than picking a winner or a loser, if they can help clear the way on distribution and help provide some incentives for that, for whatever that ultimate products are,
yeah,
to get out to the marketplace, that's a good day. So on the
ethanol side,
yeah, on the food versus fuel debate, I truly believe it's not a food versus fuel, but a food and fuel debate. Sure, corn ethanol, if you look at a variety of different other sources, sugar cane, even the talk about algae, palm trees, all, you know, the amount of energy, you know, produced from that is lower. Now, it's getting better. but corn production's been up. Corn prices, contrary to popular belief, are not really tied to food prices. I mean, the rising price, the price of corn didn't go up because of biofuel. It went up for other reasons. The price of biofuel, ethanol in this case, is really tied to the price of gasoline. That's what, you know, when you saw gasoline dropped, well, so did ethanol. So the biggest problem, I think, with corn-based ethanol is less the land and what it's doing with food is maybe questions about water, in terms of how much water that might use to produce it. So that's a very legitimate current debate. But, you know, around the world, I mean, there were some food riots in places that was blamed on corn-based ethanol. Well, these are in markets where the staple crop is rice, and rice has never been used on any ethanol. So it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with things like a drought in Australia that wiped out 95% of the rice crop. So I think there's a food and fuel debate. And in fact, transportation is a big part about making sure how people don't starve in those places.
You know, and I think that a lot of the researchers, certainly researchers at the UW-Madison, are looking at corn-based ethanol as sort of, all right, that's the phase we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
But you were talking about some of the other sort of research going on that, mm-hmm. We'll probably at some point be leaving corn, you know, somewhere down the road and zeroing in on some other products, or be it wood or whatever, algae or whatever it is that's going to carry the load.
Right, and it may be a bunch of things. Yeah, I think corn-based ethanol is often referred to as a transition fuel, mm-hmm. that it's part of what's going to get us to that next generation of biofuels, where cellulosic ethanols may be a part of it, where more biodiesel, where ethanol's produced from algae, which many people think is sort of far-fetched as it sounds. Many people think is a very productive source. Here in Wisconsin, of course, wood products and wood waste and wood that may be readily available in forests now, if they can be out in in a cost-effective way. And I mean, they're like, you know, not live trees even especially, but things that otherwise might be wood waste within those areas, and also kind of a forest fire hazard. So a lot of options.
Thank you, John, for calling. Marcus in Kingsburg, Michigan. On to you now. Hi, Marcus. Thanks for calling.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm a truck driver myself, and first I wanted to touch on the big trucks idling, and then second, I was going to ask if they were to implement biodiesel fuels into the trucking industry, how much would it increase the miles per gallon? As far as the idling, I wanted to say there is a couple of systems that they have that they call the S-Bar and Tri-Pack, which allows the truck to, you don't have to idle, and you can still get the heat in the wintertime, air in the summer, and it also it'll keep the batteries up. It'll start itself and turn on, and you can set the temperature inside. So those are a couple of systems that they have in place where you don't have to idle, because when you are idling, you're using about a gallon of diesel an hour versus about a gallon for about 8 to 10 hours when you don't have to idle, and you use one of those systems.
Okay.
But what I wanted to ask is the question was, like I said, if they were to start using biodiesel fuels, I know my truck gets about 7 miles to the gallon. Would it increase it like double fold, triple fold? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Boy, I'm going to have to say that I don't know for sure, but I doubt it would be anything that would be a double or triple fold.
No.
I think it would be more incremental and, you know, more as a replacement on current fuels. There might be some increase. But I don't think it'd be any. I don't think it'd be geometric.
You're looking more like possibly 10% or something like that, or 5% as opposed to 100. You know, doubling.
Yeah, and it's and you know, the previous caller who was also a trucker noted that a lot of engines today couldn't use it, and at least some of the biodiesel that's out there. And maybe this caller could tell us about. There was a warranty question that the previous caller raised. Is that a concern for you too?
Oh yeah, you can only put in. It'll show you like on the door. This is a new truck, so it'll show you on the door exactly what type of diesel you're supposed to put in there. And I'm positive that if you put anything else in there other than that, especially and it caused some type of a breakdown and they found out about it, you would be the warranty will be null and void.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't really know if biodiesel, would it be a lot cheaper? Because I just don't see really what would be the uptick of going that route versus staying the same route.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of the upticks are in a way more global. I mean, the cost... I would hope the cost is competitive at least, but I don't know again if it's going to be all that much less, or and would the mileage be all that much more or less? Probably again, I think it's going to be probably in the range. I think it's a matter of the sourcing, that it's you know, it would be a fuel that could help this nation be maybe less dependent on some sources outside our borders, and perhaps a bit more tied to sources that are within our borders, as well as, you know, the technology that gets it there. So, you know, does that help this caller get down the road any faster, cheaper, better, or anything? It's hard to say. But if there's a more secure source for fuels in the future, and there's more diversity of sources, then that probably does help truckers like him, because they would maybe have a little more comfort knowing that, you know, what the supply is going to be.
Thanks very much for calling, Marcus.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, I mentioned earlier, and before we go back to the phones and Paul and Jim and John and everyone else who's waiting online here, I want to go back to Viren Energy Systems of Madison, because there's a lot of buzz, hype, and information out there about that company. It's one of the hottest biofuel firms in the country, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sure you know a little bit about Viren Energy Systems.
Yeah. It's you're right. I mean, it's and hopefully it's not hype, but it's
yeah.
But it pans out. It's Viren Energy is a company that was launched with some UW-Madison technologies and really sprung out of the labs here. And today, where they're at is essentially, this is a company that can use a variety of bio sources to produce what is chemically gasoline.
Yeah.
If you ran this through a mass spectrometer and took a look at it and stacked it up against the gasoline that you'd get from, you know, the corner gas station, it's virtually identical. And it's because of the chemical processes that they use to produce this, and it's, again, these are some patents that trace back to UW-Madison technology. They have progressed nicely over time. They have raised a lot of money from sources of grants, including federal grants, but also venture capital. They are in Madison. They're located on the east side, over close to Madison Area Technical College. Or Madison Colleges, I guess they now
Madison
want to be known.
Madison College, yes.
All right. See, we're with it here. And they're really on the verge of moving to the next step. They've hired their past CEO was a fellow by the name of Eric Appelbach, who had been a part of many successful startups in Wisconsin, probably raised as much venture capital over time as anybody in the state. Current CEO is Lee Edwards. Lee came over from BP, where he was vice president of their solar division. So he's somebody who knows those global pathways to get to reach the markets. So now their task is really getting down to scalability. They want to stop making it by the tens of gallons and get up to the thousands and millions of gallons over time, because they have the advantage of what they produce, and they can also do it. They think they can also do something with jet fuel, by the way. What they produce can run through the current distribution system, right through your neighborhood gas station.
So you don't have to no infrastructure change.
Right. That's a major advantage. And that's why they've got some, you know, some interesting investors, Honda, Shell, you know, others who see that, hey, this has got some legs.
Well, it's one where and their process is they're scaling up now.
Yes, and in fact, their next step really as a company is to begin to bridge that gap on scalability, make sure that they can see how that's working economically as much as anything. I don't think there's much question about the technology, although you never know when you reach different scales.
Yeah, right.
But how can that work economically? What's it going to cost for the various sources? And they do have, you know, they can use a variety of different bio sources around that.
Let's go to Paul in West Allis next. Paul, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Virent, V-I-R-E-N-T. If you do a search for Virent Biogas, Madison, Wisconsin, in 2009, you'll find a lot of excitement. And it's exciting because biogas, you do not lose the miles per gallon, and it will be shipped through the pipelines versus trucked. So that's a cost savings for the oil companies. But that's not the only reason I called. What got me excited was your mentioning about trucks parked along the side of the road. I have to say, shame on you, Department of Transportation of Wisconsin, because they're putting up more and more signs that say trucks cannot park on the on-ramps. But that's not the only reason. I picked up at a Senex gas station in Stratford, Wisconsin, a little statement here. And jumping down, it says, currently the 87-octane gasoline we are receiving does not contain ethanol. However, the industry is shifting away from 87-octane base stock and replacing it with 84-octane. Is that going to cause a problem?
No. That's one that we may not have an answer for. I don't know. Tom, what do you think?
No. You know, the one thing about ethanol is that it is actually higher octane. And so that may be a part of a response to higher ethanol blends. Perhaps we'll have another caller who would know more about this than I would. But that is the case with ethanol. But, you know, getting back to what this caller said at the outset about, you know, being able to ship through pipes and you know, versus all trucks, that's one of the problems with ethanol is it picks up water. And that's, so that's why so much, you know, all of it has really got to go out in ways, rail and trucks and otherwise, to reach the final destination versus some of the other delivery systems.
And it does take a lot of water to actually produce that ethanol. I heard it's like over 1,700 gallons of water for a gallon or two of ethanol.
Well, yeah.
I've heard that number. In fact, I got an email on that.
Okay, yeah. I don't know that it's quite that high, but you know, it is a concern. But again, you know, the technologies and the research right now is really trying to focus on trying to bring that down in a dramatic way.
Right, and this emailer had also said he's also read it only takes 3 to 15 gallons of water, which is obviously is quite a difference from 1,700 gallons.
Right. I think it's I'd have to check, but I think it's very much closer to what the lower figure.
Yeah.
Can I throw something in?
Sure.
About the ethanol. In Iowa's the corn state, I believe. Okay. And in Iowa, at the gas pump, you have a choice. Not like communist Wisconsin, where by law you have to, you can only get ethanol, except for a few, like the BP station at Ashapum, where they fought hard to keep the ethanol out of the premium. But so why in a corn state, where you would think, you know, it would all be ethanol? They have a choice there, but in Wisconsin we don't. I was at the Waukesha County Fair, and the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association was there, and I told them what I just told you, and they said, oh, we like that.
Well, and that may be true. I think consumer choice is always going to, should be a big part of this. You know, you're right. Iowa is, I believe, still far and away the largest corn-based ethanol-producing state. They invested heavily in that, and they may have taken a few hits when that market went down. So they, you know, they would have a vested interest, I guess, in not providing that choice. But it's good that they do, and I think, you know, because consumers, and again, this gets back to not picking winners. It gets back to what consumers are going to find over time is going to work best for them. We're still in a phase where we're experimenting with a lot of things, and I think consumers are a really big part of that picture. They're the researchers and technologists can take a look at things for a long time, but until it really gets out there in heavy use, that's when you know.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Jim in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there? What am I doing? Did I? I guess we lost. I must have lost Jim. Josh emailed, wondered if there's negative impacts that the processing of biodiesel has on the environment.
There's some water.
Compared to what, I suppose you
could say. Yeah. There's absolutely. There's always trade-offs there. You know, if you look at this from a greenhouse gas perspective, petroleum is because that is releasing essentially carbon stored millions and millions of years ago.
Right,
that's a big net plus on on the greenhouse gas side. Nobody was going to can really contend with that. You can do a lot of technologies to help reduce that, but it'd still be a net plus. Biofuels, almost by definition, because they are using carbon and other you know, gases during the growing process, and then it is released upon, you know, when it is refined and then burned. That's more of a net even.
Yeah.
So that's one piece that's always a part of it. I think biodiesel will probably have some of the same water issues that ethanol does, but perhaps not as intense. And beyond that, you know, when soybeans are used as a source, that puts some important things back into the soil, as opposed to where corn can take it out. So if there's a rotation going on, maybe that can be mitigated a bit.
And Richard in Muskego, on to you. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. And I know there's been a lot of talk of corn, and one person called in with natural gas, you know, a fuel that can be made from manure and so forth. But I know I did research it myself to try to change our two cars to natural gas. And at that time, the only way you could get it was from your own household supply and then compress it, buy a compressor that at that time in the 70s cost $3,000. And then you'd have a tank that would take you 200 or so miles, maybe a bit more. And the ability to get natural gas is so limited. There's practically no filling station around that sells it.
Yeah,
yeah, and, yeah. Well, and this gets back to what we were talking about earlier about distribution and the scalability. It's going to be a big part of this. And you know, and I know as we get close to closing here, it's worth noting that biofuels, sure, they're going to compete with petroleum, but they're also competing with a lot of other alternatives that will be out there. Hybrid vehicles, electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things that are happening in those markets that could ultimately trump biofuels. I mean, it could turn out that economically and in terms of the environment, that may be the way to go for more people than not. So, but, you know, that's what's going to play out over the coming years.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's anyone who's got the answer right now should be investing heavily.
Tom, thanks so much. And your WisconsinTechnologyCouncil.com is
that's correct.
WisconsinTechnologyCouncil.com. That's the website for Tom's organization. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. It's an independent nonprofit organization and serves as the science and technology advisor to the governor and the legislature. He's also president of the Wisconsin Innovation Network, which is responsible for supporting efforts to foster technology development in the state. I'm really pleased to have him with us, and I'm sure we'll talk again about the issues surrounding biofuels here in the state. Coming up, though, we're going to take a look at business and socializing and artwork and more for women in farming here in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.